mindset when racing is 50% am I pushing hard enough and 50% am I eating enough. And I genuinely think that's where we're moving with athletes now, is the top guys and girls are eating so much. It really is as much an eating competition as it is, you know, a physical competition these days.
Welcome to the Low Tide Boys, a Swim Run podcast. I'm Chip.
I'm Chris. And this is
That was weird. Yeah, that was a weird one.
Very excited about that one. This is episode 120 of the show, people. We did it. We made it to 120. And this episode is yet another in our ad hoc series, Swim Run 201, Advanced Topics in Swim Run. Topic for this episode, what do you do when things go sideways?
From a fueling point of view.
Yeah, so you're in a race. Things aren't going according to plan.
You're bonking your brains out.
Trying to figure out what's going on. And you want to like try to get your race back on track. You want to get your experience back on track. So this episode is kind of all about that topic. And because we don't know what we're talking about, we have someone who does.
Mm-hmm.
We have senior sports scientist Abby Coleman from Precision Fuel and Hydration, who will join us later, sort of give us sort of the science and what you should be doing. But I think before we get that, I think after having that conversation with her, which we'll show, I mean, I realized a couple things. One was Orcas Island, I would have handled that. As the partner, I would have handled that very differently. I think one thing that we didn't talk about on the air, and I'm sure we were totally co-signing about this, Chipper, was that we should each be aware of each other's nutrition and or fueling and hydration strategy just to try to help the other person. Like, obviously, you're responsible for yourself, but...
Mm-hmm. But after all, it is a partner team-based sport. So you're not investing too much time thinking, you know, trying to use your crystal ball to get into Chris's head about how his fueling going. Communication, as we say all the time, is mm-hmm. super key here. But so many great perspectives that Abby provides, that she, all the different athletes that she works with, swim runners, triathletes, baseball players, other team and ball sports, there's just, I felt like I was in school.
Yeah.
I was taken to class, which was great.
I mean, and it was super interesting because I think like a lot of this stuff, as soon as she says it, it just seems entirely obvious. And you just feel like an idiot like for not doing it. It's kind of like maturity. Like you always think you're super mature. But then you look back a couple of years ago, like, oh my God, I was such a little dumbass back then.
Well, there was a really great point during the interview of when she said that, oh yeah, when you, some early signs of that a bonk is oncoming is that you kind of have a little bit of the brain fog and you're not thinking super clearly. So if that's happening to one partner, the other partner who hopefully has better possession
is
of their faculties,
not bonking their brains out.
who's hopefully not bonking their brains out, can be a little bit more on top of things. And again, I sort of hate to keep saying like, oh yeah, Orca's this, Orca's that, but like, that's a good example to keep going back to. But, you know, after it was like, well, why didn't I just stop and have a gel at the aid station or like two or three? And it's like, oh yeah, because you're not really thinking clearly because your body is not operating properly.
Yeah. And that's where I was like, as a partner, I should have just been more like,
well, we didn't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, but now it's like,
we
should have known.
Yeah.
It's kind of the thing. I mean, I definitely had an experience. I DNF'd at the Tahoe Rim Trail 50 miler and I just had like a horrid day. I think I had heat stroke. Mm-hmm. All things were kind of bad. And looking elevation, it was hot. Like looking back, I made so many mistakes and my solution to them was just like, oh, well, it'll just, this too shall pass.
Yeah.
And I think one thing that Abby talks about, which is a point well taken, is like, you need to be proactive about these things. And it's like, as soon as you feel something happening from a bonk perspective, from a hydration perspective, like you need to start mitigating what's going on. And I think a point that was super well taken, and we don't want to give away the whole conversation, was the idea of the way you plan your training around fitness, you should also be planning it around gut, you know, gut sensitivity, mm-hmm. gut training so that when you're in a race, you can actually be in a situation where you're like, all right, I know that I can tolerate 60 grams to 90 grams of carbs.
Or whatever your number is.
Whatever it is. And that's part of the plan. And it doesn't just magically happen on race day. Like, you actually have to practice these things. And I thought that point was like super well taken, that that should be an aspect of your training, just like strength and all that other stuff. Like, you should really have your fueling as a thing. And
yeah.
And it evolves, right?
It totally. And it's totally different for every person. And yeah, we might be tied together with a tether, but maybe Chris can only take 45 grams of carbs and I can do 70 or some. There could be a big disparity there, or maybe we're close. You know, you have to train into this stuff and you kind of have to find out about it. So I took a ton of value.
Yeah.
And a ton of actionable things out of this that we're going to put right into right to work at Swim Run Lake James here.
When this airs, we'll have a few days until our first race of the year.
So looking forward to that. But again, get the notepads out for this one. Abby, so grateful for her time and knowledge sharing with us and with you all. And we'd love to hear feedback about how you kind of like these type of episodes, especially the kind of advanced topics or the Swim Run 201s. We like doing because we learn a lot and we're learning a ton from and take a lot from them. So we're assuming everyone else is, but if that's not true, you got to let us know.
Yeah. And I guess like the last thing is, if you're super stoked that Abby's on and you appreciate all of her insight, you can also make us look good by using the code LOWTIDE22 at Precision Fuel and Hydration to save 15% off your first order. And I swear this, we're talking about this before we went over there. Like this is basically, it's pretty close to being sponsored content, but we swear it's not. Like, this is actually yeah. something that we think it's useful, and they're the best in the business and the most responsive to us to be honest about it. And they're awesome.
Yeah. And we're like, basically because they're supporting us, we get quote unquote access to people that
Abby,
I guess,
yeah.
you know, we amazing. Probably wouldn't normally get access to. So we're super grateful for that. And happy to bring it to everyone here and share some knowledge. If you hopefully you take one or two things away, or like me, I went through a whole notebook worth of notes. I have to buy a spiral bound notebook now. College ruled. Going to school. Abby Coleman, Precision Fuel and Hydration. Classes in session. Giddy up.
Scientist Abby Coleman from one of our favorite companies, Precision Fuel and Hydration. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're super stoked to have you. And what we're doing in this advanced topics in Swim Run is essentially, you know, when things go sideways during a race, which everyone's experienced, in a swim run in particular, the longer the race, the more these things are important because you're in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of some adventure. And we thought it'd be great to have you on to share your expertise on sort of how we should be thinking about these situations. But before we get to that, what does it mean to be a senior sports scientist?
Oh, so much. I really, even, you know, years into this role now, really struggle to sum up my role like in a couple of sentences. Every day is different, and I know that's not an answer. If I had to put it into a couple of bullet points, a large part of my role has become working with our ambassadors, who are typically high-level athletes of all sports, but a lot of triathletes, few runners, few cyclists, few swim runners, probably are the top four. Working with them to refine, fine-tune their race intakes, you know, their race day strategies. So we call that fueling, you know, how to fuel and hydrate their performance correctly. And I think that's really important to make that distinction quite early on, that what I deal with really is fueling, not nutrition. Mm-hmm. I think nutrition is more day-to-day intake, you know, everything an athlete's putting in their mouth. And I, in my role with Precision Fuel and Hydration, really focus on fueling. We do get into the weeds of nutrition a little bit, and certainly you have to look into what an athlete's doing before that event with the breakfast the night before, and again with their hydration in the day before, a couple days out if they've done any long haul traveling, that kind of thing. But we really try to make sure they're getting that fueling correct, so that in-race intake. So that's become a big part of my role, but is staying on the front foot of any new literature in the hydration space or the fueling space is a big part. Upskilling of the team. So again, if there is anything new out there, making sure that that gets its way through all the, you know, into all the people that should know about that within the team. And I do a lot of stuff like this, really education-based things, podcasts, webinars, one-to-one consultations with athletes. And then occasionally you'll find yourself visiting professional sports teams. So we do a bit of work in team sport, be that American football, or baseball, soccer, rugby. So occasionally on the ground, sweat testing team players.
And I will say lab coat optional.
Yeah.
Not needed for that. But I mean, what a great array of things you get to do every day. Doesn't sound like you're ever bored.
No, absolutely not. Far from bored, which is great. I couldn't do the 9 to 5 at a laptop, same thing every day. So it's wonderful.
Yeah, and I really love how you sort of separated the nutrition, the fueling aspect, because, you know, I think Chris shared back with you. I had some problematic fueling experiences in Orcas Island in the race last year. And I've sort of tried to adjust my mentality a little bit to be like, oh, this is fuel. Like Chris and I are big F1 fans. You need fuel to make the car go really fast, right? And that's how I started kind of thinking about it. And this is how actually when Chris and I were chatting one day, it was like, oh, we should talk about when it doesn't go bad. I mean, when it goes bad, so that people kind of get to understand that. And you have so many real world examples with all the different athletes and ambassadors that you're working with on a regular basis.
Definitely. I think to talk about the bad times is more important than the good. And it's hard because when something goes bad, everyone wants to just brush it under the carpet and move on and forget about it. But that's when we need to be sitting down with athletes the most and diving into why it didn't go right, you know, to avoid it happening again. But lots of people just want to take the ground, forget it happened, move on to the next race. It's not the most pleasant experience, you know, ego or pride is hurt or whatever, but that, you know, we want to prevent it from happening again, keep getting better. So yeah, we strongly encourage athletes when it doesn't go right, let's interrogate why it hasn't. So this is, you know, this is a great conversation that we're about to have, I think.
Well,
we'd like to think so.
We agree. We hope it's a great conversation as well. Yeah, and I think, you know, in particular for swim run, which is for the most part a team sport. I mean, there's a solo categories, but we're talking about it in the sense of its original sense as a team sport. When things do go sideways, it's almost exacerbated by the fact that you have a partner that you have to, you don't want to let down, that you so. The decisions that you make, I think, during a swim run or I guess during any team event are a little bit different than you would individually, where you're like, well, okay, well, I'm just going to slow down, maybe take some more fuel or, you know, hang out at the aid station until I feel better. But when you're trying to be there for your partner and you're trying to put your best foot forward and not be sort of the, you know, the weakest link, it kind of sets up this strange dynamic where you could go to the well, you know, maybe not dangerously, but you're more likely to, if things do go bad, to just not say anything and just try to grin and bear and hopefully that you come out on the other end. Clearly, that's probably not a good strategy. You should communicate more. But in your experience working with team sports, is would you say that's sort of a similar analogy?
Team sports is difficult because you're not tied to them.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
That's a good point.
You certainly have to work together, but in a different way. I think swim run is, you know, such a unique sport because of that element. Like you say, it's an endurance sport that you are working together, and typically endurance sport is a very singular effort. You know, it's how deep can you push as an individual? And like you say, when you're suddenly having to work with a partner, you've got to think of, you know, this external element. It's not all, you know, insular to you. So I think it's very, very different. And I actually have no experience of running one myself. I've supported members of team a couple of times in swim run. Haven't yet taken a dive myself. I'm a runner, really, not a swimmer. So that's why I haven't done it, taken a plunge
yet.
There's
still time for you.
There is. They say the same. Yeah. But not happened yet. And I think you just, you know, remember why you're doing it is a big part. And we're all competitive. We all like to do well. But I think swim run, you are trying to have fun. You know, I think that's the beauty of the partnership, doing it with a partner. It's slightly more fun. And so try not to lose your rag with your partner if something's going wrong. You know, Don't fall out. Should be rule number one. You know, remember why you're doing it. Your buddies, your friends. We're going out to have a nice day out. And if you fall out, it's only going to be awkward later on. You know, you're probably staying with that person, traveling home together, whatever. First and foremost, you know, we're not going to fall out, whatever happens. Sometimes people do just have bad days. This is unrelated to fueling and hydration. Sometimes the gas is just not there for whatever reason. And I think just being sensitive to if your partner's not performing, then, you know, all you can do is, you know, console them.
Sure. Yeah.
Sort of deal.
Try and keep morale high, I think, is a big part.
Right.
I like that.
So kind of like deal with, you know, whatever the scenario presents, just try to deal with it with kindness and, you know, treat your partner with respect and just sort of understand that these things kind of happen, huh?
I think so, as an element. Before we dive into, you know, the fueling, hydration, things that maybe should be more controllables, you know, if they're going wrong, then we can talk about how to troubleshoot and sort of work on the fly to solve them in a bit. But I think first and foremost is, yeah, don't lose your rag. Should be rule number one.
I like that. We'll add that to our paddles. Don't lose your rag. I'll have to look up exactly what that means first. But yeah.
It means don't lose your shit.
Don't lose your shit.
For us Americans.
Cool, yeah.
Exactly.
Awesome.
Exactly.
Well, let's kind of shift into when things are going wrong. So the bonk, you know, whatever you want to call it, in the cellar, there's many names. Underfueled is probably a more scientific one, or not. And what are some, I guess, some leading indicators as the athlete that maybe you should be kind of have a little bit of antennas up looking for, like, okay, hey, if I was going at, wanted to target XYZ pace and I can't hit that, is that one? Is it how your mood is? What are some things that maybe people should be a little bit clued into for themselves on maybe when you might be having a fueling issue on the horizon?
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head pretty well there, Chipper. Obviously, number one is probably a drop off in performance, and whatever metric you're using to measure that, be it time or just feel, you know, you're not feeling all that great. But I would interrogate mood. You know, is that person, is a moodiness, is a cloud coming down on them? You know, the fun is being sapped from this. You know, suddenly the enjoyment's much lower. And I'd throw in there as well, like a loss of focus, you know, a loss of, yeah, cognitive function kind of declining, your ability to make sensible decisions, or you're just finding your mind is turning off, you know, whereas when you start a race, often energy is really high, adrenaline's pumping, you've got fresh legs, you're really in the zone, you feel like you've come out of the zone. You may be thinking, oh, you know, checking that clock, thinking how long you've got left. Like, there's an element of that always in racing, for sure, maybe. But I think together, collectively, if all of them things are happening in conjunction, that's pretty strong indicators that possibly you're running low on fuel. And really, to know truly if that is the cause of the issue, you want to be keeping some kind of like mental ledger of what you've been taking. Be really mindful of what you've been putting in. That's not just on the fuel side, but on the hydration, the fluid, sodium. So don't be completely mindless of what you're putting in your mouth whilst on the move. Yes, you're racing. There's lots of other things to think about. But you want to be keeping track of how many gels you've been taking or what you picked up at the aid station, how many bottles, soft flasks you've gone through. And therefore, you know, if you're feeling all of them things, being able to kind of have good confidence to say yes or no on whether it is underfueling. If you're doing a pretty good job sticking to your predetermined plan, fueling plan, then you can almost cross that off the list and think, okay, maybe that's not it. You know, it's not my fueling. That's not the cause of this.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, that's gone out the window, you've not stuck to your plan and you're feeling all of them things, then you may be stronger inclined to say, yeah, maybe actually I should take a gel on board.
would you say that in terms of like sort of the most common things that happen when a race plan doesn't go according to plan, I mean, it seems like obviously fueling would be one. Do you think that's the most common, or is there something else that we're not really thinking about?
When a fueling plan goes wrong.
Or just in general, like when your race is going bad, you know, if there was like a hierarchy of things to check, be like, have you fueled in the last bit of time? Are you cold? Are you injured or something? Mm. Like what do you think should be that analysis?
I'd say certainly a common one is underfueling. I'd say typically across the board, athletes underfuel. Generally, it's a lack of awareness that they need to be taking more. / sometimes there's an element of hesitation to take more, like a fear that it's going to cause GI upset, so gastrointestinal issues, you know, bloating, sickness, nausea, you know, even worse, perhaps having to run to the water loo. You know, we all have had our like brush of those issues, I'm sure, if you're in the endurance game. So sometimes there's a fear for that that leads to underfueling. I'd say it's most common, and that's a big part of our role at Precision Fuel and Hydration, working with our athletes and our ambassadors, is that education factor. Yes, we're collecting the, you know, their race intake to crunch the numbers and build a fantastic case study, and happy to talk more on that for the listeners and what I mean by that. But a big part of that is to give that transparency to the athlete and say, look, this is what you're hitting grams of carb per hour, and this is what the science says is optimal. And then it's marrying what the athlete saying subjectively. You know, you might be telling them that the science says you want to be hitting 60 to 90 grams of carb per hour for a race of this intensity and this duration. They might have an experience trying to hit those numbers and it's gone horribly wrong all the time. And again, you dive into that. You know, did they undergo a sensible gut training protocol? Yes, they did. In which case, okay, then let's think of what is a more optimal target for you. Because evidently that's not. But the likelihood is that they've never properly tried to train the gut adequately. And so actually we'll talk them through doing a bit of that and then, you know, be encouraging them to take more. That is often the case. Often it's athletes not taking enough. And particularly with something like swim run, the opportunity to fuel and hydrate is a lot more limited because you're in and out of the water. And of course, we all know swimming it's not the ideal time to be eating or drinking. No, it is tough, exactly. So yeah, I'd say it's a big one. But there's a few reasons why things could go wrong. But that would be top of the list to interrogate first. Are they taking enough? And I spoke to, I listened to a talk by a top triathlete, and she says her mindset when racing is 50% am I pushing hard enough and 50% am I eating enough. And I genuinely think that's where we're moving with athletes now, is the top guys and girls are eating so much. It really is as much an eating competition as it is, you know, a physical competition these days. And so I think that summed up where we're at now. It's like, Am I pushing hard enough? Right. Am I eating enough? You know, being consistent, getting enough in.
Wow, I really like that. And then that's for me personally, that's such a drastic reprioritization of what you're thinking about during the race. You know, how's my bike going? How am I feeling on the thing? Oh, is the pace going? Rarely are you, well, for me again, I really need to focus and move the fueling aspect higher up in my prioritization of my workouts. And that's something I've been trying to work on this year. And, you know, for sure, like even as something as simple as like setting a little alarm on your watch every 25 minutes or 30 minutes or whatever you kind of have marked as the good time to fuel. But that's really interesting to hear the pointy end of the endurance field are thinking about it that much. And, you know, maybe that's not a prescription for everybody across the board, 50-50, but are you thinking about it 5%, closer to 5% or closer to 50%? I would probably say I'm closer to the 5% mark, but it's good. I'm going to dial that up some more.
Yeah, I think it's a good move. I think what you touched upon there is really good, is that setting yourself almost a reminder to be consistent. And we see, again, a lot more athletes doing that, setting a a nudge on their watch every 20, every 30 minutes. And you rightly said, Chipper, that's maybe not for everyone to follow that guideline. You want to, you know, find what works for you. And that is a big, big point, is everyone's unique. Personalize it. There's no benefit or very little benefit in doing what the bloke next to you doing is doing. And that's perhaps a really important point to make with swim run when doing it with a partner. Just because they are your partner, you'll be running at a similar pace. That doesn't necessarily mean that your fueling strategy should be identical. Mm-hmm. You know, there's lots of individuality there. The big one being, what can your gut tolerate? In theory, you know, we all have the same ability to absorb very similar amounts of carbohydrate in the gut, but the gut is adaptable. Not, you have to train your gut up to that point by slowly introducing fueling into your training sessions in those weeks approaching race day. And I always liken that with athletes I'm working with to training, you know, progressive overload. We slowly give the body a bit more stress through training so that it can cope with more on race day. We can push harder. It's exactly the same with training your gut in the weeks in advance of race day. Start where you know you can tolerate. So when you walk into the gym and you're going to go deadlift a bar, you start at the weight you know you can deadlift. You don't go in and, you know, rack up 100 kg and try to deadlift it off the bat. It'd be the same with trying to stomach 90 grams of carb per hour. That's a high carbohydrate intake that you need to build up to. So if you know that you can stomach a gel or two per hour, that's where you start, and introduce that in race simulation like training session, be it similar duration, similar intensity, similar environmental condition, you know, preferably as similar as possible. But pick something that's higher intensity mainly. And this needn't be every session, but one or two training sessions a week in the 6 to 8 weeks out from that race day. And then each week or each session, just slowly nudge that dial up, take a little bit more. And you're just giving the stomach, the gut, a greater load, but also allowing it time to adapt to that load. So come race day, hopefully you've got this sort of target number in mind that you want to hit per hour, and you're going into race day with really good confidence that the gut can tolerate that load or that stress that you're going to give it.
Right.
Awesome. That's super helpful.
Does the 60 to 90 grams of carbs per hour, does that get modified depending on the length of the race? So for example, the Ironman World Championship takes people 8 hours. The Swimrun World Championship takes people about the same. For these types of events, should you still be like, all right, like you mentioned, it's like, hey, whoever can eat the most wins kind of thing. Should you still try to maintain 60 to 90 for the entire length of that thing? Or do you try to like up it later or just see what happens?
There's so many different ways to come at that question, Chris. But generally, I'll answer it in a general sense. For the top guys, so the elite, 60 to 90 is what you'll see them hit throughout that Ironman World Champ, and same with the swim run. And again, the intensity that they're working at drives that need for that carbohydrate intake, and their gut is so well trained to that load, it's second nature to them, or most of them. So, but then they are, you know, that's a strange kettle of fish. They're almost the unique ones. I would say the kind of exception to that is we work a lot with ultra runners. So again, people that are doing 100 kilometer runs or 24 hour runs. And when you're out for that length of time, the intensity is naturally much lower that they're running at. And so I would say that those guidelines do kind of come back on themselves. They do reverse, and somewhere more around the 60 grams of carb per hour is more optimal than pushing for that 90 in that instance.
Gotcha.
Very individual. Generally speaking, anything beyond 2.5 hours in duration of sort of all out intensity, high intensity, you want to be looking for 60 to 90 grams of carb per hour. But there becomes a point where that number will, you know, drop off. That recommendation comes back down when intensity gets lower due to the duration. Where that is, very individual with an athlete.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. So that's great. I mean, Andy talked about this in a previous episode as well, Andy Blow of Precision Fuel and Hydration, or just the idea that, like, yeah, for some reason, the mythology that you should try to take as little fuel as possible and be fat adapted, like, that's not what the professionals are doing. That's not what the fast people are doing. So gut training your gut and trying to see how much you can tolerate is going to improve your performance. At least your energy levels will be higher for the length of the performance. Now, in a race setting, we talked about it a little bit before, when, let's say, energy levels aren't high and things are going sideways, kind of going through your mental checklist of when was the last time I drank, when was the last time I ate, is something else going on? Can you give us sort of some insight into sort of like when you should start that analysis, or it should just be like you should just be mindful of it the entire race, or as things go, just stick to your plan, and then when things start going sideways, then kind of approach it?
I'd definitely say be mindful from the off. One of the mistakes athletes can make is not fueling early enough. And again, that probably comes back to that feeling really fresh at the beginning of the event, adrenaline's high, perhaps you're sort of vying for position a little bit because you're all bunched up, you might go off a little bit too fast. And for whatever reason, athletes may not start fueling early enough. Sometimes it's genuinely a misunderstanding around how the body and physiology works. I'm glycogen loaded, I'm carb loaded, I've got loads of energy on board. I know that lasts me 90 minutes or so. So I might not, you know, I don't need to fuel until that point. That's incorrect, you know. And I've had that before with athletes. They don't think that they need to eat in those early stages. All you're doing there is running down your internal glycogen stores, and then they're kind of in a position where they're living a bit on the edge. You know, their body or their performance is relying on them. They're, you know, ingesting enough carbohydrate to keep fueling that performance. They're on a bit of a knife edge where if they don't fuel well enough for the rest of the race, they're going to bonk, hit a wall, whatever we're calling it. So start fueling early. And I would say that's within the first 20 minutes. Be taking that first gel, 20 to 30 minutes. And then being consistent on the fueling. Mm-hmm. Again, every 20 or 30 minutes, whatever is sort of in your plan, however you're taking that fuel in, there's lots of nuance around that. But generally speaking, be consistent, be mindful from the off. Just if it is going wrong, then, and you haven't been paying attention to it, then obviously that's a different scenario.
We'll build off that a little bit. So let's say we're in hour two of a 4-hour race and we're targeting 60 grams of carbs per hour, so 120 total in the 2 hours, and you do a little quick back of the napkin in the head, you're like, uh-oh, I've only had 80 or 60, so you're a little bit behind. Mm-hmm. And you are kind of feeling, okay, I can't hold the pace with Chris, or whatever the situation is, you're feeling a little bit like a bonk may be upcoming. What is sort of the protocol that you would sort of prescribe to that? Do I want to try to catch all the way back up to where I'm supposed to be on the carbs? Do I want to just take one or two and more, do it more of a frequency thing? Or do I need electrolyte sodium? Because I know the carb and the sort of electrolyte sodium part are two different levers that you have to pull potentially. But yeah, I'd love to kind of hear your thoughts about that when you are bonking, starting.
Yeah, I would get your hands on a gel or chew or something as quickly as possible. Okay. Get something in. No need to try and catch all the way back up. What you risk doing with that, you know, if you were to get three gels down in quick succession, you run the risk of overloading the gut with too much carbohydrate. Okay. And that's only more so if you've not only been doing a somewhat poor job on your fueling, but also a poor job on your hydration and sodium, as you already mentioned, Chipper. It's a different lever, but the two go very hand in hand, because this is a bit of a long-winded explanation, but I think it's worth doing. I always say to athletes, think of hydration as having plenty of blood on board, plenty of blood plasma volume pumping around the body. Think of dehydration as a constriction of that blood plasma volume. There's less blood pumping around the body, and that's because sweat is drawn from the blood. So as we start sweating, we're dehydrating, that's being drawn from the blood, less blood on board. That makes the kind of environment in the body a lot more difficult when we're dehydrated, because the blood is what supplies the muscles with oxygen. It's also what supplies the skin to keep us cool. Blood flow is also what supplies the gut. Now, the gut is like third on the pecking order there. Obviously, like muscles and skin are really the priority, and the gut comes beneath them. If an athlete's pretty well hydrated, they're still going to be relatively okay blood flow past the gut, which is fantastic because that helps carbohydrate absorption. We eat carbohydrate, it travels through the stomach and into the intestines, which is what we kind of call the gut. And it's absorbed from the intestines into the bloodstream. When you've got nice, you know, optimal blood flow past the gut, that carbohydrate is very quickly taken away off around the body to the muscles where it's needed. And what you get there is a nice steep gradient maintained between the gut and the bloodstream. So it is absorbed nice and quickly, nice and optimally. As we dehydrate and the blood flow around the body gets far poorer, the muscles are screaming out for oxygen, the skin's screaming out for blood to keep us cool and, you know, promote sweating. The gut falls even further down the pecking order. Blood flow can be virtually cut off. And therefore, what we see, instead of this nice steep gradient, it starts to become, you know, far more of a plateau, whereby what happens is carbohydrate absorption gets far more stagnant, far slower. It's not getting whipped off around the body as well. And so that gradient becomes pretty even. And what you can get there if you keep eating, is a backlog in the gut, and that can lead to GI issues. So I'd say that's where the importance of hydration falls in that pyramid of performance, or certainly how it helps, or where it goes hand in hand with fueling. Keeping on top of your hydration, staying well hydrated, really does help the gut absorb its carbohydrates better. And so that's perhaps one reason why you wouldn't encourage an athlete to just take three gels in quickly if they think they're behind on their fueling. One, you know, just stand alone, it might overload the gut if the gut's not particularly tolerant to that load of carbohydrate. But two, if they're also doing a poor job on their hydration, then certainly the risk of that causing GI issues is increased. And just perhaps a point to make third to that, I appreciate this is a long explanation.
I'm here for it.
It's your show. It's your show.
That can be why a strategy may work really, you know, okay or optimally in the cool, but perform or fall apart in the heat. An athlete tries to use the exact same strategy in the heat, doesn't manage their hydration as well, and then they're dehydrating far quicker, it's hotter, they're sweating more, and suddenly their fueling strategy is causing GI issues. And that's something we see quite a lot.
You know, that
typically, sorry, Chris. Oh, you're good. Typically that's when an athlete's using carb rich energy drinks, because they're reaching for that bottle more to quench the thirst. And so they're overloading the carbohydrate, overloading their gut with carbohydrate. Typically, I would, you know, if I had to pick out a common theme, that's what's happening there.
Well, I was just going to say, so everything you just mentioned going sideways, that actually happened to me at a race in my hometown. It was an Ironman 70.3 in Puerto Rico. And my fueling strategy on the bike was combined with my hydration strategy, which now I'll never do that again. That was a big mistake because my bottle fell off. And I didn't realize until my watch went, I was like, oh, I got to drink this bottle. And there was no bottle to grab behind my seat. So I finished the bike. I was having a great day so far. As soon as I got off the bike, I realized I was completely sweating. I knew I was totally behind on everything. And my thought, I took two gels, drank a very strong electrolyte drink that I would never drink, like the Gatorade Endurance. It's just disgusting. Orange flavor too. It's like the worst flavor ever. And 20 minutes later, I was throwing up. Still had I felt much better after I threw up. But yeah, like the idea that I was like, I need to catch up as quickly as possible because I have to run a half marathon right now. In hindsight, that was just a very poor decision-making on my part. But yeah, everything that you said, I've literally experienced that. And I think I like how you separate between hot and cold, because yeah, I feel like swim run, I've been saying this a lot lately, but it's kind of cold business, right? Like water's typically not bath water. It's hard to warm up if the runs aren't long enough, even if you have a wetsuit. So can we talk a little bit about the types of issues that you see from athletes being cold, and how that affects nutrition and hydration?
Yeah, definitely. The cold is a strange one. It can definitely, people think that they don't need to fuel as much, but potentially need to fuel a little bit more when it's cold because the body is working slightly harder to keep us warm. So that's a consideration on the fueling side. You know, it's just as important, if not slightly more, to fuel when it's cold. And then on the hydration side, I'd say it's really interesting because, you know, perhaps it's not as hot, so you're not getting as thirsty. But depending how cold it is, we're talking here, when it is super cold, your respiratory losses are greater. You know, when you breathe out and you see your breath, that is the evaporation of fluid from your like respiratory tract. So actually your evaporative respiratory losses are far higher. So and typically you might wear more layers, and I appreciate in racing you're probably in your wetsuit, but this is just endurance athletes in general. These are a few points in effect. People going out to train in the cold, they're typically wearing more layers, so they actually are still sweating, but they're not getting that same thirst response to drink. So actually the risk of getting dehydrated can be equally as high in the cool as it is in the hot. Now, that's not, you know, we all know that it is easier to dehydrate in the heat. I'm not over-egging the importance in the cool, but it's still something to be mindful of. And I see in the swim run, what's particularly interesting is there is a well-known effect called cold water diuresis. So when you get in cold water, when you're swimming in cold water, all the blood, you get vasoconstriction of the blood vessels in the peripheries. Mm-hmm. You get an increased blood flow to the core to try and keep as cool, as warm. You know? And what that does, it tricks the body into thinking that we have more water on board than we actually do, because you've got this rush of blood to the core. You've got lots of receptors in your core that are keeping track of, again, blood plasma volume, how much fluid we've got in our blood vessels. With that redirection of blood flow, the body thinks it's got more water on board, and the kidneys go, okay, we've got too much, we need to pee more of this out. It excretes more fluid.
That makes so much sense.
It's not uncommon.
I was wondering why it always happens to me, but now I'm in school right now. Perfect. Thank you, Abby.
Do you often need to pee when yes. you get into cold water?
Yes.
Yeah. It's really common. It's totally natural. But again, it's the body thinking we're well hydrated, but we're not. It's a trick. You might genuinely be quite hydrated, but the body's perhaps excreting fluid that it doesn't need to be excreting. It's tricked by the cold water. So again, just a reminder of the importance of hydration. Just because it's cold, just because you don't feel like you're sweating or it's potentially not as obvious, doesn't mean that you shouldn't be mindful of it.
So like a really practical kind of race tip, I guess, would be if you are feeling, or if the race is going to be a little bit colder, you might want to kind of keep that top of mind about, hey, when I get to the aid station to take on some liquids, I might not necessarily feel thirsty, but if it's been colder, I probably am, and I should have at least something instead of just bypassing it altogether.
Yeah, it's tricky. It is tricky. It's a fine line to walk, and it's something that athletes get better at with experience, and you get that intuition and that feel. We often get that question, should I drink to thirst or should I drink to a plan? And the answer where we sit is kind of in the middle. It does depend. There's circumstances where drinking to thirst is perfectly optimal, and there's times when an athlete might want to be more strategic to a plan. But generally somewhere in the middle is the advice we give to most people. Let thirst largely dictate how much you're drinking whilst being mindful of what you've drunk. And the best way to kind of prepare for that is I strongly encourage athletes to go and do some sweat rate testing in training beforehand. Get a handle on what you're losing, because then comes back to keeping that mental ledger in the race. Then you know roughly how much you're losing in conditions like this intensity I'm running, and I know how much I've drunk. So you can kind of do very quick, very crude maths. Don't get me wrong, this is far from an exact science. Mm-hmm. We're working with human physiology, under stress, you know, it's difficult, but it gives you something to go off. It gives you an awareness of perhaps what you're losing roughly. I know how much I've put in. So when you come to that aid station chipper, you have an idea of perhaps, am I really underdoing it? Am I in a good place? You know, can I run past this one or do I really need to be stopping?
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. Yeah. And ideally you would have, Chris and I both did the sweat rate in one of the labs with one of your sort of partners with PHF and then also kind of just the one off the website as well. We did one in the summer heat of NorCal when it was probably 92 degrees out when we were running it. So much higher sweat rates, I would imagine. But you would also want one on maybe one of those cooler races or cooler days. So maybe before or swimmer in practice on the next one we do, Chris, we should bring a scale.
Yeah, just do a quick
one and simulate a colder one with all the gear on, and that could be an interesting, probably pretty particular data point to have.
Exactly. I actually, you know, sweat rate testing needn't be something that athletes do as a one-off. If you can, almost do it as frequently as you can, particularly leading up to race day. Like you say, Chipper, in conditions comparable to race day, so definitely go and do a cool one. I'd strongly encourage that. And just out of interest, go and do a hot one, you know, when you get the environment to do it, and just see how sweat rate can differ. Some cool conditions, an athlete might lose less than half a litre per hour. That same athlete in hot conditions might lose a litre and a half per hour. And just make a note of that stuff. You know, most athletes are keeping a training log anyway. Just make a few extra notes alongside that. Jump on the scales before session, jump on the scales after the session. If you drink anything, make sure you include that in your calculations. That's weight added. But get an idea of your losses, different conditions. It's really useful.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, the if there's a take home for any of this, it's just like, hey, there's so much opportunity for you to understand your body better in training that can help you on race day and deal with the adversity that race day prepares that, yeah, like, you know, the race shouldn't be your dare to be great situation, right? It should be, you should have a really good idea of what you think is going to happen because you've practiced it in training.
Yeah. And the better you have a handle on that, the better opportunity you have to get the most out of your performance.
To actually have a great, you know, yeah. great day.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Practice, practice, practice. Athletes do all the training. You know, that's practicing for race day in a way. I always say fueling and hydration should be controllable. There's plenty of uncontrollables on race day, and there's always going to be things that go slightly less than optimal. You know, you drop a bottle or you lose a gel in your wetsuit, whatever it is, something's going to go wrong. It's infrequently ever all goes right. But make sure that, you know, your fueling and hydration overall should not be something that's left totally to chance. You know, it could go right or it could go wrong. It's just see if I get lucky. No, have a bit of a plan. And I think a point to make that we've not touched upon yet is this: have a plan. Don't be so inflexible that you can't differ from that. There's an element of listening to your body on the day and working on the fly. So have a plan, but be a bit flexible within that. Sometimes we call that guardrails. You know, you have some guardrails for the day, and then you're comfortable and you've got the confidence to work within those guardrails come race day.
Yeah, not unlike when Chipper drank half a beer a mile from the finish line at Glasgow.
Yeah. That was a guardrail I had not anticipated, but it was that. It was a Coors Light, so there's a high water content.
Yeah, for sure.
All good.
Now, let me ask you. So we've heard that Atala, the Swimmer World Championship, is essentially a culinary experience where there's all kinds of real food at aid stations for, you know, at every single one. There's cinnamon buns and all kinds of stuff.
I can't wait.
What's your take on supplementing, you know, focusing, obviously having your plan for 60 to 90 grams of carbs from a source that you can document and kind of keep track of? But what's your take on sort of supplementing that with real food, whether bananas or chips or whatever at aid stations?
Yeah, it's not a hard no for sure, but it's a be sensible, I think, is the answer. We had Andy, as I'm sure we talked about before, and my other colleague JP. They did the World Champs back in 2019, and we analysed their race intake after that. and there was a few chocolate bars that they picked up from aid stations. I think there might have been like a mini sausage or something in there.
Sausage.
Like there is some really rogue stuff on them aid stations. I couldn't quite believe it, but
soft
by all means,
have
a little.
Sorry.
Have something, but they also went into that event largely self-sufficient. You know, they each carried roughly 7 or 8 gels and salt capsules in their wetsuits. They also ran with soft flasks that they started with pH 1500 in, and then they were fortunate enough that at the time pH was available on the course, so they were refilling it with a sodium-rich electrolyte drink. So just be sensible. I would encourage any athlete to look up what's going to be available. If possible, most race organizers will publicize that ahead of the event. If there's something you think you're particularly going to fancy, like that's going to be a particular morale boost when I get to that aid station, I'm going to really want that. Maybe it's overkill, but I'd be pushing an athlete to go and trial that in training beforehand. Again, we all know the classic, don't do anything new on race day. Mm-hmm. But when you're 7 hours deep, it's amazing what you'll find yourself doing. So again, it's treading that line of like being sensible. Don't go for anything too unfamiliar would be my advice, really. You know, if you know that you can stomach a chocolate biscuit, by all means have a chocolate biscuit. If there is a cinnamon bun and you've never had cinnamon bun before, then maybe don't risk it. But again, individual. You know, some athletes have very sensitive guts. They have to be very careful with what they're having. They perhaps need to be more sensible. There's other athletes out there that have total steel gut that can eat anything and have never had a gut issue in their life. You know, maybe then they can go a bit more wild at the aid station.
Yeah, like Chipper having a slice of pizza at mile 27 or 28 of a 50K.
I think Abby's growing more concerned with my fueling strategy as the episode unfolds. I thought about that. I was like, I did have a slice of pizza, and I think at the bottom of the hill, they had told us the pizza was at the top. That got me really pumped up and lit a fire under me. And when I got to the top, it did. I was very underwhelmed, and it was kind of like I took one bite. I'm like, oh, that didn't quite, you know.
Yeah,
check the box
he,
for me.
He tried to share it with me, and I
was like, "You want a bite of this?"
He's
like,
"The hard pass, the hard pass."
Well done, Chris.
Thank you.
We'll do a case study on you, Chris. Maybe not you, Chipper.
It's like, So Chris ate 5 cinnamon buns and had a colossal failure. So this conversation has been super interesting and super helpful. I think if you had to give us like one sweeping generalization takeaway,
your favorite,
would it be train your gut, plan for a good race day, but be mindful that things might not go according to plan and then adjust accordingly?
It's a difficult one. How do I summarize everything? I think a couple of points, you know, yeah, train the gut is a big one, and probably just practice in training the race strategy you intend to use on race day. Don't have it be brand new on race day. A lot of athletes believe they're going to get this magical, beneficial effect when they take all the carbs on race day, when they've been taking none in training. I'm going to feel amazing taking all the carbs on race day. But the gut will just be like, what the hell are you doing to me? And it will freak out. So practice, I suppose, that race day nutrition in training. Train the gut would be a big one.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love
and it. then like you just reiterating what you said earlier, have a plan so that way you know and you at least have some wherewithal during the race what your sort of requirements should be for the amount of carbs or whatever you're ingesting, and then, you know, mental notes of how you're kind of progressing off that. And then if you start to feel that you're going a bad way, check in, how am I doing to the plan, and then start taking gels as quickly as possible. One gel.
Yeah.
And then go from
one
there.
One gel, exactly. If you think it's fueling, if you think it's hydration, you know, refill your flask at the next available opportunity. But if it's sodium, you know, if that's what you're craving, if the idea of a salty slice of pizza, Chipper, is sounding really good, maybe it's a sodium issue. So, yeah, analyze yourself. be a little scientist as you run along. Think, what am I running low on? Think of all like having fuel gauges for your carbs, fluids, and sodium, and think which one's getting low right now. Or is it that I'm pacing this wrong? You know, that I'd say that's the fourth one. Do I need to just back off the pace a little right now?
Nice. Well, Abby,
thank you so much.
This has been super enlightening, and I know that our listeners are taking mad notes right now. So I just want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us and for sharing your wealth of knowledge. And, you know, thank you to Precision Fuel and Hydration for supporting us this year and helping us get ready for the World Champs. And, just really appreciate you taking the time.
So welcome. Thank you for having me on. I could honestly talk about this stuff all day. I'm looking at time now. I can't quite believe the chat as long as we have. This is always my issue.
I know. Chris and I, we're just feeling like we're sponges. We're swimming sponges, just trying to abstract it. And this is an area that I feel like I have a lot of opportunity.
There's room for improvement for sure.
No more pizzas for everybody. On the course from me. Awesome, Abby. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for this week's episode. Thanks so much for listening to the show. Make sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and leave a review, since that's the best way to help other people discover the show and the sport of swim run.
Sign up for a newsletter at lowtideboys.com. That's boys with a Z. And check out our meme page at the Low Tide Boys on Instagram. If you have any suggestions for the show or questions for us, send us a DM or an email at lowtideboys@gmail.com.
We'd like to thank Riding Easy Records for our show music, and of course our wives for their support and tolerance of all our swim run activities, podcast, and other stuff.
Yeah, other stuff.
Way
to keep it PG. Finally, you can support our efforts on Patreon. Until next time, get out there and go for a swim.
Go for a run.
Then another swim.
Then another run.
And then another swim.
And then another run.
And then just keep going. Until you're done.
Or maybe can't stop this stuff.